Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 2:27, and that is Pacific Summer Time. And today, the Chinese, this is just like a Greek opera, that what they announced today had a really quite a marked effect, not least on the exchange rate. And that's particularly the case between the onshore and the offshore. So what did they announce? Well, what they announced was that they were going to make it easier for central banks to invest in the renminbi. In other words, that they would like it to be easier for central banks to hold renminbi as a reserve currency. That had a very swift effect. What it did was it totally closed the arbitrage between the offshore and the onshore renminbi. That had been widening, and that was certainly a cause for concern because it was representative of money fleeing the country. Opening this up put a stop to that, and this arbitrage is closed entirely. That's really quite good news. What it really means is that there is potential that the Chinese have taken a quick step and been able to at least moderate the pace with which, or counterbalance was probably a better way of thinking about it, the pace with which money is leaving the country. Well, the stock market was a little bit steadier, but Hong Kong is worthy of mention because we've continued to see a bit of a bounce here, and not least because the H-share index is right at the bottom of its range over the last 4 years, and we're continuing to see a bounce. And there are so many shares in Hong Kong that have had really quite accelerated declines and are now bouncing. So obviously, those lows would have to hold, but there is the potential for additional short covering and even potential for mean reversion in here. But the slowing of the Chinese economy also means that there is probably going to be additional stimulus, but it has had far and wide effects, and not least on some of the countries that rely on exports to China. The New Zealand dollar has been a victim of the slowdown in demand for milk in China, and also because the EU has removed quotas on milk production. So that hasn't really affected the stock market to any great extent because the currency has been going down so quickly that it has moderated the influence on the stock market, but yet the stock market is below the 200-day moving average for the first time since 2012, and it really does need to get back above that level if it's going to reassert the medium-term uptrend. Well, the Australian dollar has also been pretty weak in here, but and that has helped the stock market at least to moderate the decline, and it continues to hold in this 5,000 at the 5,000 level. That represents a pretty big pullback for Australia. But today's weakness suggests that we are going to probably get a retest of that level, and the 5,000 really will have to hold if recovery or at least support building is to be given the benefit of the doubt. There's still a progression of lower rally highs that's been in evidence since April on the ASX 200, and the rallies that we've seen to date haven't broken that progression. So it really is for the bulls to prove their case in Australia. In Europe, having a reasonable day yesterday, the majority of stock market indices were in negative territory in here today. The FTSE was down approximately 1.2%, maybe a shade less than that. And you know, Germany, which is really the largest market by far, is still hovering above the 10,000 level and down about just 0.9%. In the currency markets, the euro was pretty much unchanged, and the pound was is up to 154.45. So that was a pretty good performance, and the euro continues to, or sorry, the pound continues to look like it is going to extend its rebound and unwind the short-term oversold condition. The yen was is around the 120 area, and that's around where the 200-day moving average is. And you, over the last decade, you could quite easily have ignored what was happening in currency markets because it was all one-way trading, and that's certainly not the case any longer. And volatility in the currency markets is something that we're just going to have to live with. Well, on Wall Street in here today, after yesterday's decline, it was a reasonably quiet day, and the Dow was up about, well, just less than 0.5%, while the S&P was up a bit more. Now, we had an anomaly yesterday in the ETFs, and it's certainly worthy of mention because it shakes the confidence of investors when, for example, the S&P pulls back and then the SPY, which is by far the largest or the most actively traded of the ETFs covering the index, posted a downside key reversal. That's not supposed to be able to happen. These computers are supposed to be acting in the nanoseconds to close any kind of arbitrage. And yet, that was a quite distinct difference in the performance of two instruments that are ostensibly supposed to be showing exactly the same thing. Well, it does lead one then to the question, is the inability of ETFs to price efficiently more of a bug or a feature? When one thinks that the volume that is being traded in these ETFs has exploded over the last 3 or 4 years at specifically a time when volatility was particularly inert. And are they capable of functioning in an efficient manner in an environment where volatility is somewhat higher? And volatility has been, generally speaking, there are a number of different ways of reading the VIX index. It's much better at picking market bottoms than tops. So that really was a significant peak that we had on the 24th of August. And we've pulled back pretty substantially from the peak that it had reached, which was over 50. But we're sustaining volatile levels at basically what's happened in very simple chart reading terms is that volatility measures are finding support at the upper side of what is a 3-year base. And we would really need to see volatility coming back down to really sound, or at least for people to justify increasing their positions. And it is open to question how realistic that is in the absence of additional easing. Well, we're going to get additional easing in Europe. We're going to get additional easing in China and in Japan, but I think it's pretty much off the table that we're going to get additional easing in the USA. We may get a delay in when they eventually raise interest rates, but that doesn't necessarily mean that the size of the Fed's balance sheet will start to trend higher once more. And when we look at the stock market in the context of what's been happening to the Fed's balance sheet, well, it peaked at approximately 4.52 trillion in January, and it's currently at about 4.47. So it has contracted very slightly, but this has been a marked loss of momentum. We've seen exactly the same thing with the Bank of England's balance sheet after it stopped its quantitative easing program. What happened was that the money stayed in the account for a prolonged period of time, and it's still the case that the Bank of England has a very large amount of assets on its balance sheet. But it means that we're not going to see additional money printing in the absence of a pretty concerted economic slowdown, and that just does not look likely. What the biggest threat is that the damage that has been done to a number of emerging markets with large external dollar-denominated debt has the potential to come back and infect the developed markets. That isn't something that we've seen in over a decade because emerging market currencies have been so firm. But all one has to do is look at the news headlines and the particularly in Latin America, how the problems with low standards of governance are now coming back to the fore, and that then what we get is that currencies are coming back down because they just have not improved governance when they had the opportunity, when they had booming revenues from commodity exports. So this isn't an issue that's just about to wash through. And it really does suggest that we're going to be in a ranging phase for a while, that the support building that would have to take place in order for sentiment to be rebuilt hasn't happened yet. So we're likely to see this environment still be volatile. Oil prices are still pretty much towards the lower side of their ranges. That Brent crude is still above the $45 area. That was an area of support in January. It went to a new low in August, but that wasn't held for more than 3 days, and it's still back above the $45 area. And this continues to look like support building. And there have been some pretty bearish comments that people thinking that oil was going to get down into the 20s. But you can't rule that out. But it would first have to take out the low that was posted in late August. And I think that while it's very difficult to make a very bullish argument for oil, that you would have to have an excess of supply and some kind of demand shock to send it to those kinds of low levels. And that would suggest that this is still a sort of a support building phase for oil prices, but that their ability to rally is likely to be largely held back by the fact that there is so much additional supply becomes economic when you get back up towards $70 and $80. And against that background, then a share like Royal Dutch Shell, which hit a low of approximately $15.50 back in at the end of August, is now around $16.22, and that's still looking like it's building support, and that's after what was an accelerated decline. So we don't have a great deal of evidence yet that this low around 1600 or 1550 is going to hold, but we've already seen an accelerated decline, and that means that people have been just selling and panicking out of the share, which suggests there's a lot of shorts, and a rally above 1700 would greatly increase the potential for a reversionary rally back up towards the mean, which is currently close to 2000p. And against this background, where we do have increased uncertainty, then the bond markets have been just steady. They haven't been rallying to nearly the same extent that we would have expected in years past when we've had these volatile periods, and that just suggests that bond investors are looking at the government bond market and thinking, well, they may raise interest rates this month or next month or December or even March, but we're an awful lot closer to raising rates now than we were a few years ago. And when you see that so many companies are just rushing out to issue debt, well, that's not a particularly bullish sign either. So that suggests that companies are racing to issue debt. And if companies are so eager to issue debt, should we really be such willing buyers? Well, I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I'll wish all the best to all of you.